Hello, busybodies. Welcome to another episode of The Busyness Paradox. I am Frank Butler, here with Paul Harvey.
Good day, Frank.
Good day, Paul. And today, we have a very special episode of The Busyness Paradox. We are here live.
Yeah.
Live in St. Pete Beach, Florida, at the Southern Management Association Conference for 2023. We somehow convinced some folks or fooled them into thinking that we should do this, and they agreed. And we're super excited about this one, not only because we're at SMA, which is, I think, I speak for everybody, the best management conference. I'm going to throw you on their bus because you guys' marketing has your own. But and as you can hear, I've alluded to our special guest that we have today. But this came out of an audience or a listener of the podcast who really was interested in this topic, and it sort of touches on a lot of things that we've covered in the Busyness Paradox in some weird, interesting ways. And so this was an exciting one. And we're going to be talking about tipping. But we wouldn't just do this with Paul and I because Paul and I lack any expertise in this area. This is something way far out of my wheelhouse.
Like a lot of people in our field, which is surprising, which is part of the reason we're doing this here. This is something we can all relate to. We all tip probably more than we want to for even the most non-service services. And yet, it relates to the things that we study academically, but very few people in our field are actually studying this. So we had to import probably the most established expert in tipping research.
I would say almost inarguably the leading researcher on tipping. And we are very fortunate to have Dr. Mike Lynn here from Cornell University. He is the Michael D. Johnson and Family Chair of Services Marketing at Cornell. Has published, I mean, and I've got his accolades here. He's over 80 scientific papers on the topic of tipping. He was a former busboy, bartender, waiter. So like many people, he started off in the service industry like that, having to, you know, kiss up for tips and all that kind of stuff.
Receiving end.
Been on the receiving end of it, exactly. And so his research and or opinions on tipping have been covered by numerous media outlets, including The Economist, Financial Times, Forbes, International Herald Tribune, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Freakonomics Radio Podcast, which is fantastic. I love that podcast. ABC's 2020, CNN's Money Matters, NPR's All Things Considered, another great show. Planet Money and Morning Edition, as you can see, that probably doesn't even do him justice. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent.
So just on the show, but in person.
He's in person.
St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yeah. We were very fortunate that he decided to come down and grace us with his presence. And as Paul had already alluded to, in our field, in management, we probably woefully don't look at this kind of phenomenon because I think it has a pretty big impact on people in industry and in business in the workplace. And so it's something that, you know, Ike was asking us in the beginning, hey, you know, I know your podcast probably doesn't really fit this, but it's actually perfectly covered. So Mike,
something to think about. We don't know exactly how much is tipped because servers are motivated to hide their income, et cetera. But our best estimate is that people tip about $45 billion a year in the United States food service alone. Okay? That's a huge amount of compensation.
Good chunk of change.
Okay. How many papers have been studied looking at tipping from a management perspective? I can give you maybe half a dozen. There are a couple in Journal of Applied Psych. Management Science has a few. PSYCH has one a meta-analysis, but really, there's not much. How much gets devoted to executive pay? And what's the total of all executive pay? I mean, right? You've got 2 million waiters and waitresses working for tips, plus how many other service workers? It's a form of compensation that simply is understudied. And one of the reasons I agree to come is I want to encourage more management people take this topic up.
It's baffling to me that I don't want to insult anybody's research stream, but we study the living bejesus out of relatively mundane aspects of organizational life, workplace dynamics. And something like this is just so obvious. We all experience it. We all probably have feelings about it, positive, negative. And even just listening to those numbers you just mentioned, I don't even know if my feelings about it are justified. Like a lot of people, I kind of have this sense that at least in the U.S., tipping is slowly taking over our existence. One of our audience members just had an experience buying 2 bottles of water and was asked to give a tip.
It's amazing because no doubt she had to actually go get the water bottles out of the cooler herself, walk up to the checkout, and then they prompt you to tip. But
was it a self-service checkout? Or like, so there was a person standing there.
There was a person standing
there. To make you feel awkward for tipping.
She actually said, it'll ask you to tip. I said, other zero. They make it really hard to get to the zero.
But you know, when you think about it in terms of that, it is compensation. And these are often jobs that don't pay terribly well. Is this maybe a good thing? I don't think so. It's not a good way to go about it, I guess, but.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the question for you, Mike, is what do you think of this proliferation of this tipping phenomenon today? I mean, before it kind of made sense, you know, especially before the sort of automatic checkouts where you had to swipe the card and everything was more manual. Now they built it into this interface.
Unfortunately, it's complicated. So really, I have two different faces. As a consumer, I absolutely hate it.
Yeah.
Okay. As a business professor, I have some sympathy for where people are coming from, especially post-COVID, because we've had inflation recently. And at the same time, we're experiencing full employment. So I'm trying to get employees for my service establishment. I'm competing with other service people. I've got to pay them a lot. But if I pay it in salary, I've got to raise my prices in a time when their customers are already reeling from inflation. And so tipping is a way of paying my employees more without raising my prices. It allows me to extract money from those customers who are willing to give it up, and those who don't have to tip. I also just bought a Mountain Dew from that store across the way. They asked me to tip, and despite the fact that I do interviews on this all the time, I gave zero. And it was hard to do.
It's hard to do.
There's multiple buttons to do it.
Yeah.
And that person was watching me.
Of course. That's most of their job.
And that's where I hate it, right, as a consumer. But I do kind of understand where businesses are coming from.
Yeah.
The other side of this, though, the thing that people, I think, are not aware of when they're looking at this new technology that's facilitating them. Notice, for example, counter service has had tip jars for a long time. But tip jars are transparent, and you can see how much money has or has not been put in them.
Right.
Okay? And so you've got some idea of what the norms are. But these screens make it difficult. People talk about the person behind you can see you. Often there's no one behind you.
Right.
Okay? But what it does is you don't know what the previous people who were there ahead of you gave or not. It is hiding information about what the norm is. And I think people are assuming that if they're asking, it must be normed. And that's simply not true. Surveys indicate no more than 30% of consumers tip for restaurant takeout, for example. Almost all restaurants will ask you for tips during takeout. But if 2 out of 3 customers leave nothing, is it normative? Should you really feel social pressure to do it? I want to say no. Okay. And so that's, I don't want to completely forgive businesses. I understand where they're coming from, but I don't want to completely forgive them because they're taking advantage of a technology that hides information from us and increases the social pressure.
So much information asymmetry stuff that we get into in strategy when we're talking about what do the shareholders know and so on. So it fits perfectly in that standard sort of concept. Yeah.
I remember in the days of the tip jar, you often hear employees talk about priming the pump, so to speak. You put a few dollars in there to make it seem like that's the normal thing that people are doing to create that normative encouragement, I guess. So in a sense, this has kind of been, I guess, happening in some ways for a while. Just the technology has come along and taken it to a whole nother level.
So you mentioned it too. You said that, 30% of the people like tip at check, when they do carry out. Have you been able to do any research saying how much tipping has changed based on the tip jar versus now going on this more hidden sort of facet of the machines running it now?
No, unfortunately, there's no good systematic data on that.
You can imagine the machinery is wonderful for doing research going forward because it collects all this information. But we don't have the
right
machine information to compare it to. So it's hard. You hear anecdotally that people are tipping more with this technology. I believe that's true. But is there good scientific replicable data to that?
And I imagine this also changes the game a little bit to your earlier point about unreported tips. An unspoken, or at least whatever, a somewhat spoken aspect of tipping was that it was kind of sort of untaxed income. And I would imagine that is not the case with these computerized systems.
Well, first off, let me be clear. All tip income is taxable.
Yes.
And if you are a tipped employee, you are supposed to report all of your tip income. The IRS estimates that only about half of tip income is declared. Obviously, the half that's declared is the half that comes in via credit card. which is what you're paying with when they show you these screens. One way to avoid the screens is to pay cash.
Yep. That's a good point.
And by the way, don't forget the business paradox, the source of the truth. Just found out the truth. Make sure you report all your tip income.
Also, we do have a tip jar up here.
This podcast has been valuable to you.
But we still don't make any money on it. So, you know, please.
Although that's actually another topic I wanted to get into later. But we do see something very similar to tipping in this kind of creator economy that we're seeing in YouTube podcasts that will often have these buy me a coffee things, whatever those are called.
Patreon pages.
Patreon especially, yeah. So we've almost seen tipping really just dive headlong into places where never would have expected to see it before. I mean, it's not exactly the same thing as tipping, service tipping, but it's
a voluntary payment to someone who's providing a service. I would say it's tipping.
It's a close cousin.
And often it's a direct monetary payment, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, sometimes they even call them virtual tip jars, putting money into. And there is some research on this tipping of content providers, mostly coming out of China, because apparently it's bigger there even than it is here.
That's actually interesting, because I did want to take it to the international side of it eventually.
Right.
For example, my wife and I are traveling to Japan after we teach in China. And one of the things that they frown upon in Japan is tipping, but they have a seating fee. So it's essentially the tip before you even sit down to eat, pay that seating fee, but you can't tip. But in Germany, for example, usually you might round up to the nearest euro, maybe 10% at most. Paul and I were talking about it with Hungary and the foreign, they were, or at least in Hungary, they're starting to do just a 10% hard.
And it was off tip built into the check they give you at the restaurant. It would have it there. So if you wanted to not pay the 10% tip, you would have to like back it out yourself. Not always, but especially the more touristy.
Right, but the interesting question is, it really a tip? Does it go to a service provider, or is it a service charge that establishment labels as a tip?
I think that's probably the case.
Tip. Tipping norms vary widely, one culture to another. There's a little bit of research that looks at that, mostly by taking international tipping guides. Nancy Starr in 1988, I think, came out with an international guide to tipping where she listed 33 different occupations for roughly 35 countries and systematically said, do you tip this occupation in this country? And if so, how much? And the nice thing is she was so systematic about it that you couldn't count up how many occupations to tip in a country. Okay. And with at least with respect to restaurant tipping, and taxi cab tipping, the recommended amounts, the customary amounts are almost certainly, or percentages. And so you can record those percentages and not have to worry about issues, currency exchange rates, et cetera. And so you've got this good dependent measures, and you can find studies like Hossetti's work on cultural values. Personality psychologists have done international studies. You can get national scores on the Isaac personality questionnaire and start to look at what predicts. We find, for example, that countries who have more extra people, they tip a greater number of service providers, and they tip restaurants, servers, larger amounts than people from countries that are less extra.
That's really interesting.
It's fascinating. I had no idea. And for you management researchers out there, a lot of great resources he just pointed out to help you with research in this area. Just, you
know, the data is just sitting there.
It's just sitting.
I'm going to tap out.
I already saw Paul was looking up the data already as he was sitting over here at his iPad. He's like, is this real? My gosh, I got a whole idea going.
But even just for traveling, the number of times I've been in a different country and just had that moment of awkwardness, like, are you supposed to tip in this situation? Because to your point, Frank, they do vary. First time in Australia, every time I would meet up with somebody that I knew there, they'd say, oh, how you doing? What you been up to? What did you see today? You're not tipping, are you? It's like they don't want that disease to be brought into the country. You're tipping, making sure, because they'll take your money, you know. they'll take a tip, but we don't want that here. I get it. But it's not always that clear. Oftentimes, it's kind of looking at the taxi driver like, what do I do here? So it'd be great to have that a link to that guide in the show notes.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay, so this is tangentially related. Is there any research on generational differences in tipping? I was thinking Paul and I sometimes work on psychological entitlement. So these people who feel like they're entitled to everything, even though they may not deserve it. I just wondered how that might impact with the extroversion, how that might impact tipping, or if there is any generational differences.
So in terms of published academic research, people typically will collect age information, use it as a covariate. Older people typically trying to remember what data is. I'm pretty sure old people, I know they like tipping more, and I believe they tip larger amounts than younger people. There's been a lot of nationally representative surveys done by people like Bankrate, Bingo Box just came out. I mean, literally, I found it last night. If you simply Google tipping surveys, you'll come up with some. And recently, what they're finding is millennials basically hate tip. But there is a very clear, not just a continuous age thing, but a generational thing where millennials hate tipping. But there are also differences. Baby boomers, for example, are the least likely to tip restaurant carryout. And millennials who hate tipping are not as likely, in part because of the norms, right? I'm a baby boomer. I grew up, you didn't tip for carryout. You do tip in other contexts. So it gets really complicated. What I can say is younger consumers don't like tipping as much. And at least as far as more traditionally tipped occupations, they'll tip smaller amounts and maybe even be less likely. But a lot of that's unpublished research, still well done by marketing research firms with, you know, random digit dialing and other kinds of samples. But
thank you. I had another question about that. Just generally, if the research has identified particular antecedents, or if this is just a tax on generosity.
Tax on generosity.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of research on the antecedents of tipping. And let me start by talking about restaurant tipping, because basically, based on consumer panel data, diary data that was collected by the IRS or by the Illinois Survey Research Institute for the IRS. This was back in the 70s, so it was a long time ago. They looked at all the sources of tips that people gave and decided that 70% of tips go to restaurant servers, okay? And that may be different today. There's an expansion of people who receive tips, but still, it's clear the bulk of tipping occurs in restaurants. What's the biggest single predictor of dollar and cent tip amount in a restaurant? It's bill size. It accounts for 70% of the variance. Mm. But think about that for a minute. That's twice as powerful as everything else combined. What is the biggest determinant of tipping? And why is bill size? Because of the 15 to 20% norm and the social expectation. Bill size defines social expectation, and that's the biggest driver. The second biggest set of factors that influence tipping are really benign social behaviors that you might not think would have such a big impact. Things like squatting down next to the table so you have better eye contact, touching the customer briefly on the arm or shoulder, smiling, a big open mouth smile, standing close as opposed to far away if you do stand, introducing yourself by name, calling the customer by their name, essentially anything a server can do to increase social rapport with the customer is going to have a pretty substantial impact on tips. Why does social rapport work? Not necessarily. It is increasing the quality of service on at least that social dimension, but I don't think that's the major factor. The major factor is you care about the opinions of people more, the greater the social connection. So the two biggest factors are the things that define social expectations and the things that influence the degree to which you care about meeting those social expectations. The main reason people tip is for social approval or to avoid social disapproval. But if you ask that in a survey context, people deny it. It's the least commonly endorsed motivation for tipping. Tipping is, in part, an attempt to make up for low wages. It's a form of altruism. And I've done the research showing that most servers in this country, waiters and waitresses, are paid less than the standard minimum wage. There are about 6 or 7 states where that's not true. But elsewhere, they get a substandard minimum wage. Most consumers are aware of that. They may not know exactly what the tip minimum wage is, but they know it's less than the standard minimum wage. And that perception, that awareness, does mediate their tipping behavior.
Do you think it's more moral signaling or moral identity? Like, is it...
Have they internalized it?
Is it a thing that you're doing to get other people's appreciation, or is it something to boost your own appreciation of yourself?
I think it's both. But the social approval, the social connection, is mostly about external approval, right? Look, you raised an interesting question and one that I've just recently started to study, and I was actually surprised by the results. But do people feel a moral obligation? It's clear that we have a social obligation to tip, but do people consider it a moral obligation? I literally just last year did my very first study asking that question. And I was surprised to learn that, a substantial number of people feel a moral obligation to tip. And it's caused me, I have to go back. I've long acknowledged this sense of duty as a motive for tipping. I thought of it as internalization of social norms, but not necessarily as a moral imperative. But it actually, that duty motive, the way I've been measuring it, confounds those two things and may help explain that measure just has never worked very well. And that may, I need to go back and revisit some of these issues.
Got a follow-up on that question or topic. So do you think there could be a point at which like the tip amount becomes so high in terms of what is expected that the social and or moral obligation kind of gets washed out? For instance, now you walk up to these machines and sometimes it starts with 20%, and this is not a full service restaurant. This is just something you've picked up off the counter or whatever. And it's like, well, I was willing to tip you, but I'm not going to give you 20% for basically doing nothing. You know, it's like 20, 25, 28%. Seems like we could reach a threshold where people are like, you know what? I'm done with tipping.
A tipping point, if you will.
Yeah, sure. Sure. You have to believe that there's a ceiling in the amount people are willing to tip. I don't know of any research that's tried to systematically identify what that ceiling is. It would probably differ depending on the context and the audience, the consumer base, et cetera. But almost certainly, yes, there's got to be some kind of a ceiling. And if you, again, there's no good scientific data on this. These are all topics that can be studied, though, right? It's just that I can't do everything. So more people need to get into this field. But if you just look at the press coverage of the topic and some of the surveys that I was describing to you earlier, more and more people are saying they hate tipping, that they're wanting to get rid of the system than ever before. I think in part because of the escalation into amounts that you were talking about. That's opinion.
And I were talking about that just preparing for the show today, that it seems like there's two conflicting narratives that we're hearing. More and more frustration over the ubiquity of tipping and more ubiquity of tipping. Social move against it seems worse and worse, but it, if anything, it seems to be becoming more common, having not reached that tipping point yet.
It's a paradox.
A paradox.
We love that we got it into the end. We love it into the episode there.
Okay.
So kind of, this is sort of a different angle a little bit. One of the things that I've noticed more and more is that now they're providing on the receipts, oh, tip 18%, it's this amount, it's 20%, it's this amount, 22%. And they have it calculated out, but they don't do the math for you to be able to sum it up, right? It's like they almost lead you to have to sum up the receipt on yourself.
Is it like these suggested tipping amounts?
Yeah, suggested tipping amounts, but then they don't give you like, okay, if you tip, you know, if your bill is this and your tip is $11.56, they don't add it up for you, which, you know, a lot of people I think have to reach for their calculators. Is there a reason you know of that they're doing that? Like, is it sort of like, so that way the bill doesn't look too big, or is there some sort of psychological aspect to it?
Wow. Okay. No. Boy, you've introduced so many possible topics. Let's start with the idea of when you have tipping and it allows you to pay your servers less, right? People think that businesses are making a fortune off this, but that is simply not true. Almost certainly those cost savings are passed on in the prices.
All right.
And indeed, arguably, businesses would be better off if they were to eliminate, charge higher prices. They could pay their servers less and use some of that higher, pay their back of house more. Get rid of front of house, back of house pay disparities. Why don't they do that? Well, because if I eliminate tipping and raise my menu prices, customers will think that my business is more expensive. They don't do the math that you're talking about of adding it up, right?
Right.
And again, there's a whole bunch of research in marketing on this thing called price partitioning, separating out the components of prices. And you don't always get an effect where price partitioning lowers perceived expensiveness, but that's the most common finding. And I've replicated that in the context of restaurants and tipping, and you get that effect. Okay. So if I add things up for them, I'm wiping out some of the benefit I get from tipping, right? But why do I give those recommendations? Because research shows that if you couch it, if you frame it as assistance, it's less objectionable.
Makes sense.
Now, why am I giving you 15, 20, 25%. I'm just doing it to help you save the math problem. You can still choose whatever you want. If I just give you 10 or 15, 20, 25 without that, it seems like I'm trying to pressure you.
Pretty slick, actually.
It's actually very interesting. I mean, one of the things I was thinking about too is when I look at it, I'm one of those people who rounds up, basically doubles it, and that's my tip. Right? Somewhere in there, I like to usually round up. So like Bill today, came out where $11 was more than the 20%, but it's not the 1104 of the 22%, right? So it was right in that sweet spot. And I kept thinking, it's like, maybe maybe it's leading people to tip a little bit more than they might have just because the math's already there saying, hey, this is a good range to be tipping within. So if you're in that wheelhouse, you're doing good, right? Versus, I don't know, like for me, that was sort of my reaction. I'm doing better than 20%. I'm 4 cents off, but the math is a lot easier too.
Well, not having plus, you used to kind of have to round to the nearest dollar, right? Paying in cash. Whereas now, nothing's stopping you from saying $11.27 if that's what the recommendation is. So you add up all those little bits. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
What's interesting is I always leave a tip so that the tip and the bill amount equals an even dollar.
Yeah.
Which requires more math.
And I'm not alone.
There, it's not a huge swath of the population who does that. I do that actually at one of my wife and my favorite restaurants. It's a Thai place in town. And I usually try to route it up to the dollar. So it's like, makes it easy. But yeah, it is extra math for sure.
So similar from a different perspective, I feel like I read research that suggested when a restaurant does eliminates tipping and gives a livable wage that they lose their best servers. Can you speak to that at all?
I think we have actually discussed this on podcast before, but I do have a secondhand experience of this exact thing happening, but I will defer to the expert first.
Yeah. So the short answer is you haven't read it as academic research because it hasn't been done. I got the data to test that from the union hospitality group. Danny Myers gave me some early data when he eliminated tipping. I didn't find in my analysis huge drop of people leaving relative to front of house. Front of house didn't leave at a better rate than back of house after this change. Okay. But it was a relatively small sample. It didn't. And if you talk to Danny Myers, he would say, no, I lost staff. Okay. And I believe he lost his best staff. And it makes sense. Part of what's going on, I think, is the difference is when he introduced no tipping, he guaranteed his staff, I will make sure that your wages plus the other bonuses I give equal your annual income. And so there was no need for an immediate departure. But at the same period of time, New York State was increasing its minimum wage. And when minimum wages go up, restaurants are having to pay that to back of house. They're having to raise menu prices. When menu prices go up, tips go up. And so, but Danny Myers didn't keep raising wages for the servers. And so over time, they will probably, this is me speculating as to what's going on, right? Over time, his servers found that if they left, they can get higher incomes by working elsewhere. And so those were better servers and able to move did move. Again, it's all anecdotal. It's not. There has been no good scientific research looking at what's the impact of eliminating tipping on, retention, attraction of employees, et cetera. Great topics of research. There is research looking at its impact on customer satisfaction. I've done that research, and when restaurants eliminate tipping, online ratings go down. The only exception are upscale restaurants who replace tipping, not with service charges, but with higher menu prices. Upscale restaurants that replace tipping with service charges, their online ratings go down too. Why? Everybody hates service charges. It's a mandatory tip. I don't want to be told what to do. If I replace it with higher menu prices, medium to low scale restaurants, the customers are price sensitive and they don't like those higher menu prices. Upscale customers are less concerned about that. So Danny Myers didn't suffer a drop in his online ratings when he got rid of tipping. Most other restaurateurs who have tried this, their online ratings do go down. So
most of the research that's been done on tipping is done by behavioral economists, applied social psychologists, or marketers. Okay? There's very little management research, but it's a great topic.
I'd say it's a bit of a black eye on the field. We're not studying this.
You said we can edit this, so yes. This is awkward. You can edit it out. But am I being too academic for your podcast? I feel like the audience is fine, but
I think this is great. I think anybody can follow along with what's going on. Because, I mean, I think everybody who tips on has at least a basic understanding of what's going on. I think more so this might give some additional insights that we haven't been able to give folks in the past.
I think these are things that non-academics would want academics to be studying.
Yeah, I agree.
Certainly those who are in the restaurant business. But just casual, as a consumer too, we're all curious, like, how exactly does this stuff work? What's helpful? What's not helpful? Is it helping the people we think it's helping? These are things that a lot of people would like to know more about.
I got to follow up on that Danny Myers, because that was, when he did away with the tipping or tipping included in the bills, he was on like the morning news shows and things of that. But did he have to do away with the tipping included at some point? Like he went back to that. So what was
during, because of COVID, et cetera.
Oh,
he's gone back to tipping his restaurants.
Is he going to stay with the tipping, or now that we're getting more and more?
We'll ask him. Okay. I'm not on a first hand basis. If we're not buddies.
We're not buddy. Okay.
You raise a really good point, because my anecdotal story follows what you'd expect, that all the good servers left from this restaurant, just a local independently owned thing, raised the menu prices, all the good servers left, customers got angry about the higher menu prices, it was a disaster. But there's so many potential confounding factors that maybe the process just wasn't managed properly, communicated properly to the staff or to the customers, or maybe it's an oversimplification perhaps to say that getting rid of tipping leads to gloom and doom for these restaurants in the U.S.
Right. Something to keep in mind is, this is several years ago, but helped the New York Hospitality Alliance do a compensation survey of restaurants in New York City. Servers were making about $30 an hour, whereas hostesses and cooks and others were making huge difference.
Wow.
Okay. And you got to ask, do servers really need, if I can hire a hostess for $15 an hour, do I really need to be paying the servers $30? Right. That's including tips, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, if I were to eliminate tipping, I could then raise my menu price. I can distribute that more equity. But as long as my competitors are, I'm going to seem more expensive because customers are not sophisticated enough to add it up and say, oh, no, the net cost is the same. They don't do that. They'll think I'm more expensive.
Right.
And over time, my employees are going to find that they can get higher paying work elsewhere. Am I going to be able to retain them? Probably not. Should I be able to then hire new people? Yes. And it's not a tiered high skill job, right? Okay. Maybe it's a workable business model to just, I'm going to bring new people in and train them up, and they're going to end up leaving me to go somewhere else for tips. But you can see why people are reluctant to try that.
Yeah. That's what it seems to keep coming back to, is that the only way it works to get rid of tipping is for everyone to do it at the same time.
Yeah, but you can't make an agreement to do that, because that would be price collusion.
That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Never thought about that side of it either. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And guys, long time listener, first time caller.
That's great.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a question for you about the digital tipping platforms that you see here when you check out at the counter. And often they've got three levels, and those are set by the institution. You know, it could be 10, 15, 20. We should do 20, 25, 30. Or whatever. And one of the interesting things I had read, this is in a popular press piece, was that the payment processing companies want higher numbers on those tip screens because they get 2.9% to run a bigger transaction. So they'd rather see you tip more. So they get a bigger part on the back end for a credit card transaction. So their incentive is, why don't you tip 35%? And then we get 2.9 of a bigger number. So,
but I'm pretty sure those options are up to the retailer.
Oh, they are. Yeah, they're definitely set at the retail level. It's, but they're,
don't blame Toast or Square,
right,
for these high recommended amounts. That's the retailer and who's choosing that. What the research tells us is that the more you ask, the more you get.
Right.
Okay, if you, as you ask for more, more and more people say no and don't tip at all. But it's more than made up for by the revenue from people who still are tipping and go along with those higher recommendations. So certainly it's in the retailer's interest to ask for more. And yeah, the payment companies, if they're getting a percentage of the revenue that goes through their system, it's in their interest too, but they're not the deciders.
So I kind of want to take this in a little bit different direction. This is something that I think we've touched on quite a bit, and we've heard for a while, especially during the pandemic and a little bit past the pandemic, that nobody wants to work anymore. And of course, Paul and I have railed against that mentality largely because when you have a 3.5% unemployment rate, it's hard to say that nobody's working, right, for starters. What we saw, though, was a sizable shift of people not working in restaurants or in these kind of more tip or forward-facing sort of service jobs that required tips. And I think what we saw is a proliferation of those people moving to places like Walmart and Amazon, getting paid $15, $16, $18 an hour and getting to throw on some earbuds and just pick stuff for people.
Like the Instacart type of,
doing something that was beyond just that I have to work my butt off for a tip, I guess, and deal with potentially crime. Or what do you think drove that phenomenon, I guess, more than anything? Cause I mean, there's a lot of things we've talked about. I think a lot of it's just talking on our butts.
Is that a real phenomenon?
Exactly.
Or are we just talking on our butts?
In the short answer is I don't know. It's a theme that I keep coming back to. I'm a marketer and a consumer behavior specialist, not an HR guy, right? And management people haven't been studying tipping. So there's not a lot of good research on this question.
It's an excellent answer.
I don't know the answer.
That is probably by far the best answer we could ask for. I think that's something that has always been on my mind is like, okay, we're seeing people shifting over from those occupations largely because it's consistent pay, consistent rate. You know, I'm not going through lunch crowd, then dead zone, and then dinner crowd, that kind of thing. So I get smoothing of the income over the day. I'm not having to be nice to people constantly, especially if they're being, like I said, they're being butts, you know, because there's a lot of people who are not the most friendly sort of people was to serve. So,
I helped pay my way through school by waiting tables and bartending. Why? Because it paid me more than any other job I was qualified to do. And I have to believe that is still true today.
I imagine if you're good enough to get the prime shifts.
Yeah. I wasn't working at IHOP.
Yeah, right.
Right. And in fact, I started out in a French restaurant where we wore tuxedos and did side cooking. I had to start as a busboy to get that job. Mm-hmm. But I have worked at, mid-scale Italian restaurants, and it was still true that I made more per hour. For any other job I was qualified at the time. So I don't know why people, it is true though, it's just a nasty job. I mean, people have control over, let's talk about some of the negative consequences of tipping, all right? You're beholden to a customer who can keep withhold payment or not, okay? That empowers them to treat you badly. Think about your manager. Management, there are laws against discrimination, okay? They have to pay me at, same amount per hour as the person. But my income depends upon how many shifts I get,
what those shifts are. In a given shift, who gets assigned to my table? Management can control my income in ways that are very hard for me to say I've been discriminated against. Right? And so there are some negatives to working for tips. It's not just the income uncertainty, although that's certainly a component too. It's control over by management, by customers who are free to abuse it in ways that they're not, management's not free to abuse, and customers aren't free to abuse you in these other retail contexts.
Yeah, that's heavy stuff. I had not thought that all the way through before.
Nope.
But it makes perfect sense. And it's the type of thing that can happen right, to your point, can probably happen right in front of your eyes, and you might not be noticing it. The person who's being discriminated against probably notices it. But it's kind of like the abuse of supervision stuff that we talk about. Like, well, you know, is it legitimate, or are you just complaining because maybe you're just not a very good server? And yeah, what a mess.
That does add a whole new thing. And now you got it with the abuse of supervision thrown in there. So
The abuse of customer,
right? Yeah. A new angle to it.
New angle.
No, interesting. Yeah. Well, just throwing out still another one is role conflict. There's been a little bit of theorizing about it, but very little research. But the fact is that as a tip worker, you've got two bosses. You've got management and you've got the customer. And that can create role conflict. They don't necessarily want the same things. And it's in my self-interest to, for example, give extra pours as a bartender to the customer. My lawyer doesn't want me to do that. But if they don't know, I'm going to collude against the interest of the firm. Where else do you let your customers pay your employees and then expect your employees to be loyal to you?
So, you know. That's why I don't understand why management people have this.
Yeah.
Hey, this is crazy.
This is so funny because I still remember when I was first moved to Atlanta, I was working there and I would go to Buckhead. That a friend of my cousin's actually, he was a bartender at a really high end establishment. And we'd go sit there and, you know, have a drink and the guy wouldn't charge me. I'd tip him a boatload of money, right? Because I mean, he didn't charge me. He was like best friends with my cousin. So that by proxy, maybe, I guess, part of the family. But I would tip him. And of course, what he did with that money is he ended up starting probably one of the hottest bars and clubs in Buckhead until he recently sold the property because they wanted to build another skyscraper apartment complex. But now he's got a franchise, seven different bars in seven major cities, all franchised out. And he's just absolutely killing it. But, you know, I can't help but think, it's because of probably people like me padding his pockets a little bit more because he's taking care of me, not his, because they're paying by the pour, not by.
Exactly. And if he's not charging you, it's a called it's thing in marketing called service sweethearting. And about 30% of servers admit that they at least sometimes don't charge customers as a way of getting better tips. And you might think, because I told you, the biggest predictor of tipping is bill size. So is giving away free stuff really going to increase your tips or not? I don't have any good field study. I did just do a hypothetical scenario study where I find that, yes, even though the bill size goes down, customers are so appreciative. If the server says, I gave you this free on me, then tips go up enough to make up for the fact that they're tipping on a smaller bill size. And they get more money as a result. But yeah, tipping is a system that encourages employees to steal from their.
That to me is fascinating. And I know, for example, that when we go to certain places and they don't put something on the bill, I'll notice it. And I'll immediately give them extra in the tip just simply because I know that they won't have to even mention it because I'm checking the bill. I'm going, oh, they didn't charge us for X. I make sure that I'm essentially giving them that extra of what that would have probably cost or at least close to it. So yeah, and it becomes theft in that sense. So.
Yeah. And I've done a couple of, a bunch of different studies where the server doesn't acknowledge it and I get results are all over. I consistently find if the server says, I gave it to you, their tips go up.
for those service people out there.
Like, okay. I'm really curious then, with that information, is it, to what extent is it gratitude and the compersion to tip without any authentic gratitude for the service that's causing this sort of ill will towards tipping as a general thing? Because the experiences that you're describing where you get free drinks or you tip extra, or I'm getting this feeling you're glad to give that, whereas the general sense of getting tipping is becoming less and less of a glad experience.
There was a management article a couple of years ago that talked about the difference between giving and giving in. Okay. And I haven't yet specifically used that terminology, but it's, I think, applicable to tipping. Some people, and the same people may fit into both camps depending upon the circumstances. Some people tip because they want to give and they're happy to do it. Other people tip because they're giving in. They feel some external compulsion. And typically the people who tip because of this external compulsion don't like it. I mean, I know that's in the article they were talking about, the fact that how do you differentiate? Well, if you give people the option, the people who give won't leave that circumstance. They won't avoid the opportunity. But the people who are giving in will try to avoid it. So when I go in, I carry my own luggage. I don't let the porter get a hold of me.
Absolutely not.
Good to others.
Add the hard way.
So, so both of those factors underlie tipping. Some people, it may be dominantly one. Some people, it may be dominantly the other. And it varies by context. But yeah, thank you.
Actually, I have two things. The first, the compulsion. Okay, have you noticed these POS systems where they literally expect you to hit tip? If you brought your item to the desk to them, and then they ask you for it, literally, it just happened out there.
It happened to me too.
Yeah, and you feel guilty, so you hit a button, and you don't realize that this is already $5 anyway. yes. Yes.
Oh, there we go.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I said the same place and I did.
So 25% right there, I think. Or up. No, it's a third. 33%.
So I did it because when you're standing, okay, it's easier to say no to someone on the phone. But I've been on the other side of that register. Heck, I'm a student. I'm still on the other side of that register. And so, you know, then you start thinking, what is she going through? Okay. You know, she probably doesn't get paid a lot. Okay. And if I, you know, 18% on $5, that's not much. And I'm like, if a dollar is going to kill me, I'm already dead. And so it's just kind of, I don't know. It kind of pulls at your heartstrings a little bit, even though, gotta admit, the older I get, the more I'm feeling like you. And it's just like, look, you know, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. But hadn't quite gotten there yet. And the second thing is, could reciprocity be the reason why when a server tells you that they gave you something for free, that you then tip them more because, oh, they did something for me, let me do something for them?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. 100%. And in fact, again, the research I did is hypothetical scenario. I don't want to oversell it. But, you know, I collected these kinds of measures. Their affect is higher. Their sense of indebtedness or obligation to the server is higher, which is getting at reciprocity. And those mediate the effect. So some of it is, hey, it's just, you know, I'm in a good mood because I got something free. Some of it is, I owe that to you. Thank you. And some of it is, I've got a little extra money. Might as well give it to you. All of those things are contributing to that effect. And that's why I believe that it would occur in a field setting. I just got to get an establishment
to agree to randomly assign customers where the server can give them free drinks or something. And it's hard to get that.
You'd almost need a budget to help offset the lost cost, right?
I got to say, the reason I thought of doing this research is a guy, the VP of operations, Dave and Buster's, was finding that his servers were not charging drinks, not alcohol, the soft drinks stuff. And he wanted it. He said, it's got to be hurting their tips. Can you study this? And I said, sure, let's do it. And he authorized. We did two studies. But the first one, the servers didn't randomly assign people to conditions. And I know because the group sizes differed.
Right.
And group size couldn't have differed if they randomly assigned the tables to conditions. And then the second study, I don't remember what exactly, but there were problems with the data that it just wasn't trustworthy. So even when you get an establishment to agree, a higher executive it's hard to do field research, and you always need to double check to make sure that, the data is valid.
And I would imagine that Dave and Buster's would be sort of unhappy about them not charging for the soft drinks, given that there's such a high profit percentage.
Yes.
In the beverage side.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I understand why he was willing to do this research. His servers were giving it away anyway. And if he could come back and say, no, you're hurting your own income in terms of tips. And he was willing to take he knows what results. You do research because you don't know the answer, right? We didn't know that it would come out the way he wanted, but it could have.
Yeah.
And if any business out there wants to do this research, contact
me. Yeah, well, and we'll have the contact information in the show notes. But we'll have the link to his profile over at Cornell. And, and I keep thinking about it. It's like, yeah, the soft drinks alone, that's got to have, on a scale of Dave and Buster, that's got to be a pretty profound impact. If even 15% of the drinks that they're serving are being given away,
interesting,
huge.
It's a huge, non-realized source of income, but it's also, I would imagine, not a huge expense. So there's cheap water and syrup. So yeah, I think the argument could be made that giving the soda away has benefits. I've seen a lot of bars do it if you're not designated driver or whatever. So it can encourage other benefits. But yeah, on something scale of a chain restaurant like that, must be talking some serious money.
Yeah.
Is it possible there's a framing effect with this? This one's on me. You mentioned in your scenarios, I don't know if it was part of the scenario or just the phrase you use, you mentioned this one's on me. So do you get the extra tip only if you kind of put it out there that way? That almost implies this is coming out of my pocket versus you just give it to them and they'll frame it. Yes.
I don't believe I used that exact phrasing in the study. I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact manipulations. I've got over 80 papers on this and forget about it over time. But I'm pretty sure it wasn't an issue of the money came out of the server's pocket. That wasn't the issue. It was just, I'm giving you this cop, okay? As opposed to just leaving it off the bill and not saying anything. I've tried some studies where I did that, and I get results that are inconsistent from one time to the other, and I don't know what's going on,
especially here.
But I was able to consistently get it. I replicated to make sure that if the server says, you'll notice your desserts were,
complimentary
or something.
It does. It actually, Paul made a comment. So you got to determine, probably have a proxy at least for how drunk is the customer.
Because that might have an impact, hopes for free. And I did not test that.
If it kept that fall to study a truly to sit down.
Well, could it be willingness to,
sorry.
I talk so loud. Could it be willingness to trust what's on the receipt? Could that be a component? Because some people don't even look at the receipt. They just.
I'm guilty of that.
I wonder if the people who don't look at the receipt, they don't notice and they just pay what they're told, and which could bring in personality issues.
Absolutely. But in the hypothetical scenario studies that I was describing, then the server didn't say it. I said, you notice that that it was about less than you expected. And when you checked, this was missing. But the server, that info didn't come from the server. It came from me, the scenario writer. Okay. And that's when I get results all over the place and I don't know what's going on. But you're absolutely right. In the real world, in the field setting, there are going to be a large, if the server doesn't say something, there are a lot of people who are never even going to notice it. And obviously for those people, tips will go down, right? They'll tip the same percentage maybe, but it's on a lower bill size. So the dollar and cent tip amounts will go down for those individuals. Is that more than made up for by the reciprocity and other factors that would lead to higher tips?
That's the
story. I'd love to do a field study, but it's hard to get people. It's an expensive field study to do.
I think after this session, we all need to go over to that store there and just, you know,
do some field studies, some observations and such. Yeah,
if he was tipping how much. Yeah. By the end of today, we can have like a working paper put together.
So I feel left out because I'm the only person who hasn't bought a soda at the place across the way. But it's been interesting to hear that there's so much variance there in how people approach tipping and whether they feel obligated to it because a dollar doesn't matter a whole lot to me, but it might help this person. I'm guessing most tipped people in the service business are, if not the working poor, they're not loaded. Nobody's like, look at all these waitresses and their BMWs and big houses. Like, you're still working for a living, even if the tip percentage is quite high. So I was wondering, Dr. Lin, if you have a sort of advice for people when they're confronted with this, other than just like, just vote your conscience. I mean, if you feel bad for the person, tip them. If money's tight, don't. I mean, do you have any way that people can approach this and not feel bad about the system?
Yeah, I am not an etiquette expert. And I don't want to tell people what they should or shouldn't do. I can tell you it's mostly waiters and waitresses who are paid a subminimum wage. It is possible to pay other groups if they make enough in tips consistently enough, any employer can pay the subminimum wage. But in practice, it's mostly waiters and waitresses. On top of that, waiters and waitresses typically have to share their tips with busboys and, in particular, bartenders. And often what they share is a percentage of their receipts, of their bills. So if I have to give 2% of my total sales to the bartender, if I'm a customer who doesn't tip or under tips, I'm contributing to those receipts and they've got to pay out that bartender. And it's certainly not fair to me. It doesn't seem fair to make server pay for the privilege of waiting on. Okay. So I feel really obligated to tip waiters and waitresses. Other than that, I don't feel an obligation. It's really a question of what kind of service did I get? Some of it is, yeah, they can benefit from it more than it hurts me to give it. So why not do it? There have been contexts where I've tipped where, look, I was coming home late at night from a conference, drove in or flew into the Syracuse airport, needed a ride to Ithaca, which is an hour away, right? It was midnight. There was no one around. The taxi driver was abysmal, horrible. I mean, he was unkempt, big burly guy, cursing because he was about to get off and the has to take me for this hour trip, and the entire time he's cursing. And I certainly didn't want to give him a good tip because he was unpleasant and I was literally fearful for On the other hand, I understood why he was being that way, and he knew where I lived because he didn't live my address. So I gave him a big tip, mostly just to avoid any future repercussions.
Where's tipping end and bribery begin?
I'm also
had a locksmith come and I broke a key off in my car. And I needed a locksmith to remove that key. He told me $50 an hour, which is not bad pay. He was a self-employed businessman. If he wanted, he could have asked for more. But I gave him a very generous tip because it took him 2 hours to do it. Now, yeah, he charged me by the hour, but I didn't mention that it was like 20 degrees outside. And he was in my car that I couldn't even turn the engine on to get the heater going because he was broken. So, and that's a situation where you traditionally don't tip, right? Sometimes you tip for fear. Sometimes I tip out of fear. Genuine, you know, you kind of did above and beyond. You couldn't imagine that you'd spend this much time in the cold. You deserve reciprocity. I have different motivations. I typically don't tip if I feel social pressure. There's enough reactance in me to say, fuck you.
Nope. We're all good.
But that me and my vow, I don't want to tell other people what to do because you have different values and yours are just as legitimate as mine, right?
In the field study, how would you get around them being honest about cash tips? Because if, let's say, someone gets a cash tip, right, and they owe other people portions of that, and there's a tax implication as well, it seems that, at least in my experience, most people just take the cash tip and put it in their pocket.
Certainly. It's the cash tips that people are underreporting. How have I gotten around that in the past? The nice thing is that we all have students who are working for tips, or most of us do. And you can establish a relationship with that person and ask them to be honest and say, I'll never reveal your name. You have no reason not to lie to me. And if you've got some kind of a relationship with them and you can promise them anonymity, I have trust in the data I've collect. When I've had servers collect data like that, I've tended to trust them for that reason.
That's a really good point, that we all have built-in data samples. Students.
Most of them are, that's the job that they're working. As you mentioned earlier, was that sometimes the only skill that you have
at that point without the degree.
So,
And you can do night experiments, right? Didn't have to randomly. I feel guilty. I had a student at the University of Houston before I moved to Cornell who I just routinely asked, what do you guys do to increase your tips? And one student said, I squat down next to the table and I swear I get more. I said, would you be willing to test that? He said, sure. So we randomly assigned people to conditions, and it turns out he got $1 more per table when he squatted down. But because he had randomly assigned 50 tables to a standing condition he would have squatted at, it cost him $50 to do that study. He's a co-author.
Well,
it's sounds like he got the better end of the deal.
But yeah, you can do lots of, you know, true experiments, right? If you get the right collaboration.
So this is, again, a random kind of question. Is there a particular day of the week that is notoriously bad for tipping? Because I know there's always a joke among the servers that the Sunday crowd tends to be the worst tipping.
So I've seen a variety of studies, or it's not published studies, let me say. Many of the point of sale systems companies, like Square, like Toast, have put out data on day of week. I don't remember what they found, but I do remember it's not always consistent. Do I believe there must be a day of the week that's better or worse than others?
Yeah, there must be, but it's, I don't think it's like universal and so forth. This whole question of there's a widespread perception among servers that Christians are bad too.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's anecdotal, but yeah.
Hear a lot.
Are Christians bad too? I've got studies saying yes, but I've also failed to replicate it. And so I don't know.
So many different types of Christians. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. There's so many different types of Christians. I know that's not why we're here, but
when I do just surveys and ask people, how much do you generally tip? And then what's your religious faith? And I've separated out Protestants from Catholics. I don't find consistent. I don't find any consistent differences. Okay. I also don't find consistent differences between Republicans and Democrats, for example. Although I've seen some data saying that there are state differences depending on whether they consistently vote Republican or not. And I want to say that Republicans tip less, but I'm not, I don't remember. So I do know that I've done lots of surveys where I'll routinely ask this kind of demographic information. And it's what's surprising is there are huge individual differences in tipping. Some consumers tip more than others. It's not explained by the conventional kinds of factors that you might think, education, income. Those all play a role, but it's a tiny part of it. The bulk of the individual differences is idiosyncratic. It's kind of interesting.
Management scholars, let's get on it.
Yeah, really, it's time. You have a question?
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for psychology, and so I'm wondering, as far as, has there been any research that looks at the attributional defaults of people and their relationship to tipping? Are there certain people that are maybe more likely to assume the server is good or helping or benevolent?
No research looking at that kind of issue. There's research, for example, with pizza delivery, where they can manipulate when they promise it. And so in that way, manipulate whether it's slow or fast in service.
Right. Yeah.
And that influences the attributions. And then the person, if they were slow, they gave an excuse, you know, like, I'm sorry, traffic was worse than we expected. And that makes up for the attribution makes up, right?
Uh-huh.
Had there is this one paper on misattribution.
Well done. Yeah. I'd be curious to know if, you know, you get the wrong food or it's bad quality, something that's more of a backhouse issue, whether people blame servers and tips go down or whether they acknowledge it.
Food ratings do influence tipping. But whether that's a mood effect or whether that's a misattribution, I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah.
I've done a lot of research. Like I said, I've got over 80 papers on this topic, but I've been also working mostly alone, right? The next most prolific tipping researcher is an economist named Ofer Azer, who's got like 20. And think about this topic. It's a huge topic. No one or two people can study it all. I mean, that's why I agreed to do this. I want to get more people to study this phenomenon. It is a bigger phenomenon and more important, and it's directly relevant to management and employees. So there's lots of room for research.
We're going to lead by example, Frank. By the end of 2023, we're going to have not a fully written paper. We're going to have started a study.
Just keep in mind, I'm gone for the entire month of December. So
at the end of 2023. You can tell I have not given this much thought. By June of 2024. By some future date.
By some future date, we will have something. No, I think this is something that for us, again, Paul and I, you know, usually we have some comfort level in understanding some of the material, just generally both having gotten Florida State, having the Paul being the more micro guy, me being more macro. We took those classes, but I never recalled ever seeing anything about this type of service employee and the tipping and the impact, and especially in the compensation and benefits side or any of the other things that we've already talked about today. So I guess that's going to beg the question for you, Mike, is how agreeable would you be to working with a management scholar on maybe pulling some stuff into the management side?
Oh, absolutely. First off, my best, he left Cornell to go to Rutgers, but Mike Sturman was my best friend. You may or may not have heard of him, but was a past associate editor of Journal of Applied Psych, and we've published some things together on this, and absolutely, I'd be happy to.
So there you go, folks. Again, another reason to reach out.
No excuses.
Yeah, no excuses. I mean, obviously, he's got access to the data.
Okay. So I've heard that Black people are horrible tippers. And as a result of that, remember how you talk about giving in? I end up, that's another reason why I kind of over tip when I'm at places. Because it's like, hey, see, look at me. We're not all. have you seen that in your research?
Yeah. I didn't want to say anything because I hate to be the person to make only Black person in the room.
You might want to set that one out.
but when you said you tipped, and I thought the two of us who were white who had the same spirit didn't. I go, that's counter what. Okay, what does the data say? As on the whole, Blacks tip in restaurant settings, Blacks tip less than whites. And that is robust. I can control for all kinds of stuff. And education, income, perceptions of service quality. It's a robust finding. Black-white differences in stiffing. Blacks are also more likely to just not tip at all. Those disappear. It interacts with socioeconomic class. So that there's no difference between Blacks and whites in the high SES group in stiffing. The difference in stiffing occurs at low SES. But the percent tipped, assuming there's a tip, that persists regardless of SES and doesn't interact with SES. I've never fully been able to explain it. The data, the strongest explanation is that there are, I would say Blacks are less aware of the 15 to 20% tipping norm, but I have a sociologist who called me out on this, a reviewer, who I actually then got the editor to have this guy contact me. And we've published together since then. His response was, don't assume that yours is, your norm is the right norm. There are different tipping norms in the white and the Black community. And indeed, when I do the research, if I ask whites and Blacks, how much are you expected to tip? Roughly 70% of whites will say, give a number in that 15 to 20% range. Only about 30 to 35% of Blacks. So they're just different tipping norms. And that explains about a third of the Black-white difference in tipping. Yeah. What the other third is, I still don't know. And I studied this for like 4 or 5 years, and then I ultimately stopped because I needed to move on to other topics. I had done what I could figure out, but it's an important issue. And the reason I studied it for so long is servers perceive Blacks to be poor tippers. They don't want to wait on Black customers. And what is even worse, restaurant chains anticipate difficulty staffing Black restaurants in Black communities, so they're less likely to open restaurants in Black communities, in part because of anticipated difficulties in staffing due to differences in tipping. So when I did this, I tried to get as much publicity saying, hey, there is a reality here, and it's largely, not all, due to differences in awareness of the norm, and the restaurant community needs to advertise tipping norms more to everybody, because a third of whites don't know it's 15 to 20% either. That was the most shocking thing is I thought everybody would know at the 15 to 20% tipping restaurants. Not true. But, you know, I went to industry conferences where I had a predominantly Black audience because it was a minority group. The hardest talk I ever gave was Black-white differences in tipping to a group of 400 managers who were people of color.
Really? Why?
You don't want to talk up and say people in your category are bad tipplers. And yet, but the thing is they knew it because they worked in the industry.
Sir.
And by the way, you're not alone. Many Black people who are aware of that stereotype feel an obligation to tip to combat the stereotype. So that's what I thought when you said you tipped and we didn't. I thought, I bet he's fighting a stereotype, but I didn't want to bring it up. You raised it, so that's why I asked you about it. And it's not that I'm afraid to talk about these issues. I study them. I talk about them, but I try to be sensitive.
Okay, well, let's just to be honest, people who look like me could be a little oversensitive sometimes. So, but we know the truth. But I think one of the reasons for the under-tipping, I mean, in relation to the readily accepted social norms of the majority, let's put that right, is more of an issue of survival. It's like, look, this is what I have. This is what you asked for. This is what I'm paying you. And so if I give you a little bit, here's a dollar. And so it's not a pretty thing, but it is very common and it's very prevalent. And you are right. You do have those who are like me who purposely overtip because, okay, and let's be honest, when you're Black and at this level and you're about to join, you're already elite if you're getting a PhD. But if you're Black with a PhD, wow. And so there are so many norms that you're already fighting as it is. Where are my pants at? How did I say what I said? What's my hair look like? I mean, you know, and it's just, tipping is just, it's just another one of those. Let's go ahead and put some extra. And
yeah. So first off, I want to challenge your explanation that it's an issue of kind of means. Because I can control for income, and the Black-white difference persists. I don't want to speak to your experience of being Black. I don't know anything about that. Wife, there was a thought I had that now has somehow escaped. If it comes to me, I'll mention it again. But I don't think it's just a matter of income. Okay. Or means, oh, it's this. I've often wondered, because if it's a matter of the church, because I can't tell you how many Black people, but not white people, will say, I only give God 10%. Why am I giving 15% to the waitress?
Well, but it also says tithes and offerings. So technically, it's the 10% plus. But once again, I know I'm getting yelled at by Dr. Broad. This is not why we're here. But
and I've often wondered, is that part of the explanation? But I could never figure out a way to test.
Well, now, as far as when I said survival, I wasn't talking about income. I was talking about mentality. Because you'll have Black people, I call this chocolate. You know, Black people are chocolate, white people are peach, because who doesn't like chocolates and peach? Just, and if you don't, I don't want to know you anyway. but we've all known that chocolate person to make a whole lot of money, but still the same person, because you can take a person out of the ghetto, but it's hard to take the ghetto out of the person. We've heard that before. It's not so much money. I think it's just a mentality. It's who you are. It's where you're from. And like, I'm from what they would call the bottoms. I just don't sound like it because my parents sheltered me and they kept me, you know, in a lot of education. But I'm from that place. And doesn't matter how much you make, you're always looking around. Like, I live in a nice suburb, a nice house, but I'm always looking over my shoulder because I'm always just expecting something and somebody, you know, and then, you know, confirmation bias, we, you know, well, improvements. And so I think that the issue with Black people in tipping and chocolate people in tipping is it's overall just mentality. Doesn't matter how much they have, unless you have those who want to show off, then you know, you have the other end of it.
I was going to say, what is why that it's an issue of mentality? I just want to know what's the construct and how do I measure it to test it?
Job security, the proxy.
That biggest proxy, yeah.
Perceived economic security.
I was just thinking this is a perfect construct for a management scholar to figure out. There's a scale development opportunity right there. It could be great for JOMSR.
Although, to be honest, that's more of a consumer question.
It's fair.
Yeah. But it's an interesting one. By the way, both whites and Black. There is mixed data on this, but the most compelling evidence is both whites and Blacks tip Black servers less than white servers. That's a management issue.
Mm. Oh, that's fascinating.
Wow.
Okay.
Wait, both were?
Both white and Black customers tip Black servers less than white servers, holding their perceptions of service quality constant.
Now, that's interesting because I would expect that from Black people. No, seriously, it's chocolate people. We treat each other horribly. But I just wouldn't, I wouldn't have expected that from our fair-skinned brothers and sisters. Okay.
And that's a management issue.
Yeah. That is actually quite fascinating. So any other questions from the audience? I think that was a very fascinating discussion. Mike, thank you so much for being a part of the show. I've learned a tremendous amount. Hope you guys have as well. And with that, I think we're going to say a good day.
Good day. Thank you,
Tippers.
The Busyness Paradox is distributed by Paul Harvey and Frank Butler. Our theme music is adapted from It's Business Time by Jermaine Clements and Brett McKenzie. Our production manager is Justin One Take. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'd love to hear from you. Please send any questions, comments, or ideas for future episode topics to input@busynessparadox.com or find us on Twitter. Also, be sure to visit our website, busynessparadox.com, to read our blog posts and for links to the articles and other resources mentioned in today's show. Finally, please take a moment to rate and follow or subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, or, I don't know, wherever the heck you get your podcasts.